You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
What is going on, K-State Nation? This is the Purple Project Podcast here in Manhattan, Kansas. Y'all know what the deal is, K-State folks. We're all about the latest and happenings of Kansas State Athletics. My name is Eddie Greer, the third host of the Purple Project Podcast. I'll bring on my co-host in just a little bit before we get into this jam-packed episode. Of course, the Purple Project Podcast, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, Radio.com, and Amazon Music as well. If you have Alexa in your home, you can tell it to play the Purple Project Podcast. And you do that right away in the comfort of your own home. And it's getting chilly outside, or I should say cold outside, where it's supposed to be here. Well, unfortunately for me, but living here in Manhattan, Kansas for a few years that I've lost count and sort of used to it, but you're never used to it when it gets this cold. We're recording on November 12th, 2020 here in Kansas. So cold front once again popping in here tomorrow morning. It's supposed to be warm again here, at least here in Manhattan, Kansas. So, but yes, K-State final bye week here of the season. Heartbreaking, frustrating loss to Oklahoma State, 20-18. Jam-packed episode. We will talk Oklahoma State, recap that. Look around the Big 12, and then I want to get takes on volleyball. And I left you with a teaser last episode. Men's basketball schedule. Bruce Weber spoke to a few of the media on Zoom call today. Jeff Mitty for the women's side as well. I want to say that for another podcast, but we'll focus on those as well. And volleyball doing a tremendous job this year as well. They get ready for their final weekend set against TCU starting tomorrow. But first, finally, let's bring in our co-host here on the podcast. He doesn't live here in Manhattan. He lives in San Diego, California. Alex, what's up, man?
Oh, not too much, Eddie. You know, it's the same old out here. It's kind of odd this upcoming weekend for me, because K-State's on a bye. The Chiefs are on a bye. And I'm like, this is the first weekend in a while where I don't have necessarily really any investment in an athletic contest, so you know, we'll see how that goes. But you know what, Eddie, after these last couple K-State football games, you know, that's fine. You know, I can take a week off of K-State football, because they found a couple different ways to rip your heart out. One, they just said, you know, we're just going to get destroyed and let you feel the pain of that. And then the other, they decided to do the opposite. They decided to rip your heart out in a excruciatingly close game. So eager to talk about that with you. We obviously have a lot to talk about there. The Chiefs did bail me out on Sunday. That was a good thing. They didn't make it easy. They had me in doubt as well, because they played pretty sluggish on Sunday too, but they bailed me out. All's good. And here we are.
Yeah, and real quick, yeah, the Falcons also have a bye also this week as well. So not much looking on TV with all the cancellations going on with the SEC and even more games going on. So there's very little to go on anyway. So
they just wiped out half the college games are gone now.
Yeah, as we record this podcast. Yeah, and the big one, LSU, Alabama, canceled. That's a huge one there. So there's a great, the coronavirus here in the wintertime really starting to rear its ugly head here. And K-State has its share this week as well. I'll touch on that here when we get finished here with Oklahoma State. But yes, Alex, they find a way, K-State football team, to rip your heart out once again. I was at the ball game, and I'm going to just get right on down to business here. Oklahoma State came in this game ranked 14th. K-State had Oklahoma State on the ropes, costly turnovers, resulting in a two-point loss, 20-18, where Oklahoma State did not have Tyler Wallace, which I was looking for him on the field. Didn't see him. Like, where did you go? And I tweeted you and then got the news about that. Chuba Hubbard, not a factor in this ball game like he was last year. Eddie, no more 296 for me, so that's out. But, yeah. Man, I don't know where to start.
Where do you start?
First off, I want to give a shout-out to the people who were there at the stadium. This game felt like an actual game. Like, the Arkansas State game did not feel like an actual game. Everyone was out chilling, having a nice time, acting like it's a spring game. And of course, we lose that game, did not play very well in that game. And then of course, KU, a few weeks ago, I was up in a suite with my coworkers, and it was just your normal KU game there. But this game had the actual feel of a big time game, even with the 25% capacity. I got to give a shout out to the fans. They were into this game. And yes, it's kind of weird to say one more game left in the homestand, the home schedule, excuse me, with Texas coming in here next month. But I got to give a shout out to the fans. They made K-State Nation. They made a huge difference in this ball game. And it just felt, the atmosphere just felt normal. I mean, not normal, but an actual football game. And K-State, they came out to play in this ball game. And first half, it goes back to the first half. I said somewhere last week that you got to score touchdowns, not field goals. This is what K-State did down there. You can go to that. You go to Courtney Messingham, very conservative play calling in the third quarter. Again, you can go to the turnovers. And apparently, Will Howard's under fire from the K-State Nation. Not playing very well, and I know I'm bouncing around a lot, which I love to do, but Will Howard in the last two games, let's just start with the offense here, because defense played lights out, in my opinion, in this game. Will Howard, 120, and this is getting lost because of the two turnovers, obviously, but 125 yards on the ground, your leading rusher. Who would have thought about that coming into this year? Your backup trying to make a difference on the team. Obviously, you don't have Skyler in there, who's out for the year. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's trying to make the excuse, now we're getting late in the year, that, yeah, he's a freshman. He has to be a freshman. And me and you talked about this. And now's the time that you got to show improvement. And he has not, in my opinion, he has not done that quite yet. And that's a concern moving forward. And yet, still, Here comes Alex, the Big 12 conversation, and yet K-State is still, after all of this said and done, still in the conversation, but a costly two-point conversion in the first half. Why are you chasing points early in the game? And I said this to Kate directly. These were my exact words to her when Phillip Brooks did not catch that two-point conversion pass. I said that I hope it does not come back to bite us at the end. And look what it did then, a couple hours later. It did. So, I mean, early in K-State, if you kick the extra point, you go up 13-0 at the half, and who knows what you do in the third quarter, but the third quarter seems to be the worst quarter for K-State this year, probably other than KU, which is KU. K-State, they really have not found a footing in the third quarter. I don't know what it is. But you blame it on the conservative play call and whatnot, but they didn't do anything in this third quarter, and I'm interested still of how many yards. We probably didn't earn no yards. I know it was two series for sure. It's got to be under less than 20 yards, something like that, but that can't happen. And especially going in up to Ames next week, and you're already struggling with coronavirus hitting your team again. There's a lot of issues, and I tweeted you about Sammy Wheeler. That's another weapon loss for K-State. Sammy Wheeler, for the second straight year, out with an injury. He made a huge play in the game there to set up the drive there with Phillip Brooks and Will Howard getting in on the touchdown there, and then, again, mishandling the two-point conversion there. So, again, all this come back around. I'm kind of summing this up in general here. K-State might have two-pointed themselves. I've been waiting to say this all day. They might have two-pointed themselves out of the Big 12 conversation. Even, yes, they got to play Iowa State, I know, but not with the kind of lack of weapons. We talked about this all season long. Wide receivers have been underperforming and whatnot. I feel like I'm going on a rant here, and well-deserved, but yeah, I mean, you say what you want about the trying to get yourself in the Big 12 appearance, but you're going to get embarrassed if you maybe make it that far. So I'm putting it this way, Alex, and you can take it from here. K-State, 2 points, very costly, and if you kick an extra point somewhere, if you go down there and tie the game, and this is what sucks, because Will Howard, if Will Howard doesn't fumble that ball, that was like a hot potato there. Will Howard trying to do too much, a freshman mistake, ball, it happened in slow motion. And I forget the defender's name. He comes up with it, runs it all the way back, and the air just lifted out of the bill, just literally. You can hear a pin drop at that very moment. Yes, Will Howard leads the drive back down the field to score a touchdown there. And then let's not forget the game-ending pick, which you throw it to an unproven guy in Fox in double coverage with his safety high, throw it right to him. So, again, there's costly mistakes there. Will Howard under fire with the fan base here in town. It's just a lot of issues right now for K-State. And this coronavirus not helping much for K-State again like it was earlier in the year, when we talked about it earlier, they had to cancel all activities due to the virus. Now it's coming back up where they need this practice to get ready for Iowa State here in another week. But all around, Alex, just a missed opportunity for K-State. And I left the game frustrated at what could have been.
Yeah, you know, a missed opportunity. I don't know how it's better. Well, let's look at this, and let's just see how much of this opportunity this was, okay? Let's break this down. If I told you last week, on last week's podcast, going into this Oklahoma State game, I said, I can predict the future, Eddie. Spencer Sanders is going to throw for 108 yards, no touchdowns. Joe Hubbard is going to rush for 31 yards, no touchdown. And Tyler Wallace isn't going to play. Who do you think is going to win? Well, I would have been sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, K-State's going to win this football game. And somehow they couldn't win. All of what I just named to you. Now, shout out to L.D. Brown. Played fantastic for Oklahoma State at running back. 15 carries, 110 yards. And there were some nice plays from Oklahoma State receivers. Dylan Stoner had 7 receptions, 62 yards. Big 22-yard reception. So, there were players that did step up and make plays for him, but flat out, K-State outplayed Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's football game. I don't like to use total yards as a barometer for who played best, because we remember the Bill Snyder days. K-State won tons of games, you know, with 100 less total yards.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't like to look too deep into total yards, but I mean, if you go down the line, you know, K-State has more first downs. K-State's 8-18 on third down. So Oklahoma State's 4-15. K-State has 370 total yards. Oklahoma State has 256. K-State has more passing yards. K-State has more rushing yards. Oklahoma State has more penalties. K-State wins time of possession. K-State literally wins, like, every single statistical category in this football game, except the final score. That's the one thing that they did not win in the final score. So, honestly, looking at this box score again, Eddie, just almost makes me nauseous, because when you're K-State and you get an opportunity like this, and I shouldn't say an opportunity because the defense, as we'll talk about here a little bit later, I mean, they balled out. And K-State did earn holding Oklahoma State to 20 points. I mean, that was the defense making plays all game long.
Technically 13.
Yeah, and so, yeah. So we'll talk about that a little later, but as you know, it was just a complete missed opportunity, and it started, as you said, Eddie, with the two field goals early in the game to 6-0, could have been 14-0, heck, 10-0, you know, split the difference, you know, get a touchdown, get a field goal, go up 10-0, and then you're not chasing points there on that third possession when you score, kind of difficult, but the way the flow, the game flow was going, you kind of felt like they might have held up because I don't know about you, Eddie, but I didn't feel like Oklahoma State was ever really going to get going on offense. I just didn't think it was going to happen. I thought that K-State really had Oklahoma State frustrated, confused, kind of like that TCU game where I never really felt TCU was going to be able to punch K-State. Offensively, because K-State just had them so rattled. They were just like crumbling. And I feel like the same thing was happening with Oklahoma State's offense. And Oklahoma State was missing some guys. Tribble got hurt. Tyler Wallace wasn't in there. Spencer Sanders didn't look very good. K-State had him rattled. I think K-State dinged him up, too. I think he got injured on a hit, too, possibly. So, I didn't think that it was going to happen. I felt like K-State was going to have to give that game away, and field goals may have been able to do the job, and quite frankly, Eddie, they should have done the job. And so, just frustrating all the way around. To get to Will Howard, I'm kind of torn, I'm kind of split on this because, you know, there's people who are saying, you know what, we got to give Will Howard a break. I mean, you know, he's a freshman. He's going to make mistakes. We knew when Scally was out for the year, this was going to be part of the territory. This is going to be part of the true freshman quarterback experience, and we did. You know, we did know that was going to be part of it. And you know, there were people who point out he made a lot of good plays in this game too, and he did. He did make a lot of good plays in this game. I mean, he did throw for more yards than Spencer Sanders, which isn't saying a lot, but he did throw for 143 yards, and he did throw for a touchdown. He did rush for 125 yards and a touchdown, had two touchdowns. K-State's two touchdowns in this game, and he was the majority of K-State's offense. I mean, without Will Howard, I mean, Harry Trotter had 9 carries, 43 yards. Deuce Vaughn had 17 carries for 40 yards, and then, you know, Sammy Wheeler obviously had that 58-yard reception. I mean, you know, K-State was relying on there was no Briley Moore, so I mean, they were relying on Jack Stineen to fill in that void. He had 4 receptions in there. Kept running those little passes out of the flat with Jax, and so he was a big part of the offense, and he was the reason they were in the game. So it's hard for me to criticize Will Howard because he was the reason that they were often in the game, offensively, but at the same time, he totally gave the game away. And you can't deny it, and I'm not saying that as a shot at Will Howard or anything like that, but he did give the game away. I mean, he did. That's what he did. I thought it was great that Will Howard was able to answer when K-State got down 8 and go down and score a touchdown. Mm-hmm. I thought that showed a lot of poise, showed a lot of moxie, I thought it showed a lot of composure. But to be 100% honest, Eddie, those are things that I know Will Howard has. I know he's got the composure. I know he's got the moxie. I know he's got that drive and that. I know he has those things. That was nothing. It was great to see it, but I knew he had that in him. What I'm a little more concerned about is the fact that he is really not evolving in the passing game. And it's great to see what he's doing running the football, and that's... That is a really good thing. K-State's going to need him to run the football, but he's just not evolving in the passing game, Eddie. And also, you got to just take care of the football. I mean, I think that will come a little more with time. I think that will come as he gets older and as he matures. I don't think that you'll see those types of turnovers. But the biggest concern for me is the fact that he's not evolving you know, in the passing game. He threw under 50%, you know, 10 of 21. That's just not going to cut it. And you look at Will Howard's completion percentage on the year, and it is, I believe it's 40, let's see, it's 54%. That's not a very good completion percentage, Eddie. 48% on the road, that's even worse. And this was a road game. But either way, 54% is not a very good completion percentage. And that's a little worrisome to me. And then the turnovers are obviously worrisome. You know, he's had, it's five or six turnovers these last two games. Five turnovers these last two games. And that's, you know, granted, you're going against two good teams, but boy, you can't do that. And, man, the other thing, too, Eddie, is I felt like K-State could have taken a field goal down there where they were in the red zone when it was, they were down 13 to 12. Because at that point, Oklahoma State had ridden that wave. I felt like K-State kind of withstood Oklahoma State's push. K-State had the wind in the fourth quarter, so I didn't have much confidence that Oklahoma State was going to be able to drive the ball down the field in that wind, because nobody was driving, was scoring when they were going against the wind in that game. Nobody. I mean, Oklahoma State got all 13 points with the wind to their back, and I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought if K-State knocked one through there, K-State would have gone up 15-13, and the way the defense was playing in Oklahoma State against the wind, I really thought K-State would have got a stop and won that game. That's really how I felt. So that made it hurt just that much more. Me thinking, man, I mean, I really think that would have done it. I really don't think that Oklahoma State would have gotten to field goal range. And even if they did get to field goal range, I had confidence that K-State could have gotten down in field goal range to kick game winning field goal. So, man, even if he just got held up the ball, I mean, I would have been fine even if it wasn't a touchdown. I mean, a touchdown would have been great, but I would have been fine if it wasn't a touchdown. So that was just frustrating, you know, that fumble. And it was just so ill-advised. And he wasn't even hit. The ball, he just dropped the ball. I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, at first I thought he might have gotten punched out. And then you see the replay of it, and he just lost the handle of it. And, man, you can't make that mistake. I don't care if you're a true freshman, Eddie. You can't make that mistake when you're playing Power 5 football and in meaningful games, and you're in, you know, you're in a position where, you know, you're playing for something. I mean, you're really playing for something. And that's a big football game.
Yeah,
that was that one was a really like, oh, you can't do that. The interception was not a smart decision. And that was I don't know what he saw. I don't know what he was doing. I really don't. You know, with that said, I didn't have confidence in case it was going to go down the field there anyway. But I don't know what he saw there. But the more concerning one to me was in the turnovers. What was the one where he just let the ball go? I mean, you can't do it. I mean, you can say, "Oh, he's a true freshman." He's a true freshman. And the ball wasn't even hit. I mean, you've got to hold on to the football. That's high school. In high school, you know to hold on. You need to hold on to that football. That's just that, you know, I can make that excuse if he threw an interception in a double coverage and that's how he turned the ball over there. I could say, okay, that's a freshman mistake, but that's not a freshman mistake that he made. That's just a bad mistake. So, you know, that one was tough. And then, and you know, to kind of put the cherry on top of the Will Howard thing and going back to the passing game, he's going to have to find a way to evolve in the passing game. And I don't think it's something you can just flip a switch overnight. And you can't blame Will Howard for all of it because he doesn't have anyone to throw the ball to. So, you know, what are you supposed to do when you don't have a receiving corps? That makes life difficult. It makes life difficult. If Will Howard, Eddie, had Chris Harper, Tremaine Thompson, Tyler Lockett as his three guys, like his quarterback's coach had when he was playing at K-State, I am sure this would be a different story for Will Howard. I am sure would be much easier for him. I think we would see him succeeding at a much higher rate. And if you gave Colin Klein this group of receivers, I don't think we would have seen him do what he did.
Oh, gosh.
Those years. So, you know, it's, you know, part of it's Will Howard. And he's got to find a way to evolve, but, you know, he didn't have Bradley Moore. The let's just call a spade a spade. The receiver corps stinks right now. I don't know how to sugarcoat it. They just do. We've been talking about this all season long. They're not getting better.
No, it
just is what it is. And defenses are able to key in on Deuce Vaughn and take him away. And K-State doesn't have an answer when that happens. You know, they do it for Riley Moore, but it didn't happen in this game. So, it's Skylar Thompson could cover some of that up, but you can't ask a true freshman to cover some of that up. So, you know, he needs to find a way to evolve there. But, you know, it's hard to see. They're just going to have to continue to rely on special teams and defense, Teddy. That's really what they're going to need to do moving forward. And I don't mean to sound like a Debbie Downer here, but I really can't see how they would go into Ames, and we'll talk about this more in the next podcast, but I can't see how they would go into Ames and get a win, just because I don't know how they have the weapons to compete with that, to compete with that team. You know, Iowa State's got a good defense, they got playmakers on offense, got a good quarterback. I don't think that you're going to have an opportunity like you. This was the opportunity. This is how I'll end it with Eddie. This was the opportunity the K-State had to stay in this Big 12 race. Oklahoma State didn't play well. They had guys get hurt. This was your chance to steal one. This was it. This was your chance. And K-State wasn't able to take advantage of it. And I don't think that you can bank on these types of circumstances happening again in Ames. And if it happens and K-State finds a way to get a win, awesome. I would absolutely love to eat crow. I ate crow about the final score of this game. But the truth of the matter is, it's just really hard to see. And if K-State loses to Iowa State, you can put a fork in Big 12 title talks about K-State. You know, they need to, in my opinion, probably win these last three to make it to Arlington. So, it's just a missed opportunity. You know, we talked about the top and I'm with you. I'm jumping all over the place because I really don't know where to go. I don't really know where to talk, where to start on kind of how they blew it. But they did. They blew it. They blew an opportunity. And if they would have found a way to get this game, I think that they could have lost to Iowa State and still been right in the thick of things for the Big 12 title. But they just couldn't take advantage of a golden opportunity.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden for the Purple Project Podcast, recapping Oklahoma State. Yeah, that's well said there. And just going back to the 2-point conversion there, when Chris Kleiman called it, I was kind of looking for the right word here for me. I was kind of dumbfounded by the decision there made. Go ahead, kick the extra point, and you go in with a 13-0 lead, and Oklahoma State, yeah, you said it perfect. You said it right on the nose there. They didn't do jack squat on offense in that first half, getting shut out. K-State defense playing lights out, shut them out, slowed them down, and we were dead. We were both wrong on the predictions. We thought that K-State didn't have a chance in this ball game, and they did. It turns out they did, and squandered an opportunity. And he's going to get Chris Kleiman's going to continue to get grilled about that leading up to Iowa State. I'm pretty sure about that. But speaking of Tyler Lockett, Blake Lynch hit both his field goals on last Saturday to move him to 9th. In school history and career points score for Kansas State. Now he's at 216. That passes Mr. Lockett. And so Lynch continuing to move up the lead to the career points for K-State there. So Blake Lynch, yeah. Will Howard holds on to that ball. You're looking at, I was content for the field goal at that moment.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think we would go down and score a touchdown at that particular moment of the game. So all you have to do is take care of the ball. In that situation, you get your sure-handed kicker, Blake Lynch, on the field, He kicked the field goal with the wind behind his back and speaking of the wind, yeah, that wind was ruthless.
That was a big factor in the game. The wind was a really, really big factor in this game, Eddie. And I really don't think a lot of people realized it. And I didn't realize it quite at the time, but I mean, that was part of the reason Oklahoma State did have that third quarter push, is the wind was really a serious deal. In the game. So yeah, I just don't think a lot of people realize that. And quickly, I did mean to bring this up and forgot on my part, but you mentioned the 2-point conversion, and I did want to quickly touch on that and say that I said the exact same thing as you. I looked over to my parents because I was watching it with them this past weekend, and
okay,
I said the same thing. I said it before it even came out. I said, ooh, I don't know if I do that. And then they went for it, and they didn't. And that ball went through Phillip Brooks' hands, and I said, I could see that coming back getting them. I mean, you're playing with fire against Oklahoma State doing that. You know, you don't chase points in the second quarter, especially against a team like Oklahoma State. Ooh, I don't like it. And then, lo and behold, it came back. And, you know, Coach Klein, after the game, he said, you know, hey, you always want to get up two full scores. You know, you want to get up 14. We knew we had a great play that worked, and we went with it. We didn't get it, but I have no regrets on it. And, you know, I'm great for him for being convicted. And he's right. They did have a play that they knew would work, and it did work. And Phillip Brooks didn't just drop the ball, and he needs to catch that ball. Let's just be honest about it. And
yeah, it hit him in the hands. Yeah, so you got to make that play.
Yeah, it would be a great call, Coach Klein. Great call, Coach Klein. So I do understand when a coach is like, I got a perfect play, and I know it'll work, and I'm going to roll it out here. And so, you know, I can't fault him for that. I'm also kind of split on that, because I'm like, I do get it. If you've got something you know is going to work, go get it. But at that point in the game, it just didn't feel necessary. K-State was in total control. I really felt like 13-0 would have, you don't even want Oklahoma State to feel any sort of momentum. And even when you just don't get a 2-point conversion like that, that can flip the momentum. And I'm just not a big fan of chasing points. I've just never been a big fan of chasing points, especially K-State in that position, a game that you're supposed to lose. You're up by 12. And I just don't feel like chasing points was the right thing to do there. And ultimately, it ended up biting him in the butt. Did it cost him the game? We don't know, ultimately. But it sure did have a large
impact. They lost by two, so it did. So it did. The proof's in the pudding of the score. The proof's in the score. 2 points, you just can't do it. That's a late third quarter, fourth quarter thing.
Yep.
You need points.
100%. That's a second half move. That is a mid second half, late second half move when you're trying to extend that to a full two scores. I don't think that you do that in the first half.
No, and Travis Tannehill had a good point on the Insiders podcast for Go Power Cat. He said, you know, you're not going to get the score perfect every time. You know, 7-14. He used that analogy, 21-28. You're not going to get it every time, man. So, it's Travis Tannehill. He basically played when I was at K-State, a former tight end. So, he's basically saying the same thing. Like, kicked an extra point, going to half to the locker room. I know Fitz was not happy with the call either. So, a lot of people are not happy with it.
It just didn't make sense.
So, changing points early. Yeah, that was out of whack, and you touched it on the receivers, and hate to go back on this, but we got to touch on it again. I mean, Will Howard not developing in the passing game. It's on both, and unfortunately, we did not have Bradley Moore, and hopefully he can be healthy by the time Iowa State rolls around. Now that you lost Sammy Wheeler out of the equation again now, that only leaves Nick Leonards, and he threw that double coverage pass to Fox, his last name. I can't remember his first name on top of my head, but to an unproven guy like I talked about earlier tonight on the podcast. So you hope for K-State's concern that Bradley Moore can be on the field in Ames next week. But yeah, this receiving core has been, I don't know how to put it. They've been just flat out awful. That's a nice way to put it.
And
I had high hopes for this receiving corps going in the offseason. We talked about it in the offseason. This was probably the strength of K-State's offense was the receivers. And it may just be a disappointment. And Malik Knowles apparently got hurt again. And we did not see him again. And so, your leading catcher is your fullback, Jackson Ng, with four catches, 35 yards. You already touched on that. And Samuel Wheeler had that huge reception for 58 yards. And we saw a Keaton Garber sighting for the first time since he landed at K-State. And that was a ballsy call there, right on the goal line, when K-State went on to try to tie the ball game up there. You give it to Garber, who hasn't been playing in much meaningful snaps. I mean, he's playing garbage time, but a little bit, but he hasn't played when it counted. That was a ballsy move to get him the ball right there. Rushing, he had a carry for 4 yards there, so I think they're going to need him in the receiving lineup. And obviously we talk about DJ Render, Seth Porter. These are guys that are unnamed, not even big-time names. Of course, that's K-State tradition right there for you. But Seth Porter, Keaton Gardner, Phillip Brooks.
Fucking Gill, Eddie. They broke his wrist against Texas Tech, I believe it was, and they really miss Joaquin Gill. They really could use him. I mean, they just need depth. I could go into a whole spiel about how they need young blood, but we're not going to go down that.
We're not going to touch that. Ooh.
No good. Yes, obviously they need Josh Youngblood right now. We know that. We don't even need to touch on that. But I will touch on Joaquin Gill. I mean, they really could use Joaquin Gill in there as just a common presence, just a reliable target that you know has good hands, you know he can move the chains, you know he's got some speed, nice possession receiver. I mean, Joaquin Gill, I mean, I knew it would hurt when they lost him, but I had no idea that things have gone about as bad as you could possibly think at the wide receiver position. And I didn't know that they were going to need him the way that they have, but they were really missing Joaquin Gill right now.
Yeah, and also, looking at the stats here, I thought Sebastian Taylor had a catch. Turns out he did not. I know he dropped a pass in the game early in the first half. So, I mean, we want him to be the number one guy. He's been really consistent at times. And we know Knowles ain't going to get it done for you. So, yeah, I mean, going forward, this is bad news Bears for K-State. And I lost now to Sammy Wheeler now. So, going up to Ames, that's going to be a hard, tough task already. And, yes, Alex, I agree with you on Iowa State. They have weapons on that side of the ball. But if Brock Purdy turns the ball over three times and gets a pick six, a couple pick sixes, I'll take that. You know, the way K-State's defense is playing right now, I'll take a couple pick sixes there on Brock Purdy
That's their path, Eddie. That is exactly what their path is against Iowa State. They can beat Iowa State. I think that can be said. But that's exactly what they're going to need. They're going to need scores from defense and or special teams. They're not going to be able to just rely on scores from the offense. The defense is going to have to come out. They're going to have to play at the level that they played against Oklahoma State, and they're going to need to force turnovers, and they're going to need to create short fields for the offense or score. I mean, that's going to happen, and that's the only way K-State will have a shot. It can happen, but that's what's going to need to happen. They're going to need to turn Brock Purdy over.
Yeah, and that's actually good. We actually made a good transition there to defense. But real quick, though, back to receivers, though, I would get Phillip Brooks more involved in the game. That's your best weapon right now. Because he, obviously, we know what he can do in a return game. We know that. Receiving, I mean, he has issues also, but when he gets the ball in space, he can move. So they're going to have to fight Corey Messingham and his conservative waves. He's going to have to get the ball to number 88. So, all right, so that's a good transition. K-State defense, I really think that if they come up to Ames next week locked in like they were in this game against Oklahoma State, they can cause Brock Purdy. Again, they have to slow down Breece Hall like they did last year. They slowed him down last year. That's the task that they got go up this year, but only in Ames. That task is going to be harder, but I think this defense if they go up there focused, they can do it. But if they play like they did against West Virginia, they ain't gonna happen. That defense that we saw at West Virginia, that can't happen. You gotta try to turn Brock Purdy over and give the K-State offense. I know we're going way ahead, but just thinking out loud. Yeah, just thinking out loud here. K-State offense needs short field. Try to turn him over. And, I mean, Brock Purdy's been night and day for that team. I mean, yeah, he's the big bet. A lot of people say he's the best quarterback in the Big 12, but not, in my opinion, he's too inconsistent, from my opinion. But I could go on a whole spiel on that, but I could say that for next episode. But, yeah, but this defense slowed down. Like you mentioned, Alex, Spencer Sanders, he didn't do nothing. Chuba Hubbard was hurt, banged up. He didn't do much either. Yeah, going back, scoring up the stats here. Yeah, real quick here, LD Brown. Yeah, LD Brown really hurt K-State. And just going back, K-State defense played lights out. I know Wyatt Hubert had a hell of a game. Our boy coming alive, A.J. Parker. The missed tackle on that huge third down there that went in for a score, if I remember correctly there. That was a wide open missed tackle there. Open field, you gotta make that tackle. I don't care if you're a senior, I don't care if you're a junior, I don't care if you're a red shirt, damn freshman. You gotta make the damn tackle there in that situation. He just could not do it. One-on-one, you hear it all the time, NFL, college football, open field tackling. It's critical on defense, and K-State, probably for that one big error there. And also, Ross Elder missed a tackle on LD Brown on one of those critical plays in the second half of the game, too. But Jerron McPherson continues to play big. He led the team in tackles, seven solo. Elijah Sullivan had four solo and seven total tackles. Elijah Sullivan had a bonehead mistake in special teams, which you cannot do, and he knows it. And a guy I want to focus on here, and I know I'm a secondary guy because I played in the secondary when I was on defense, is Ego Boydo. We talked about him a little bit on his podcast here the last couple weeks, and man, he set the tone on this side of the ball, making some jarring hits like he did. He's really come on to his own, and I didn't realize Justin Gardner was hurt either. I was watching on a television screen, obviously. I was at the game, so I was wondering where the number six at. Keandre Thomas deserves a lot of props. Six total tackles, all of them solo for him. He played big. That's the guy I wanted to see coming from Minnesota from the year. He played very well in this ball game. And Wyatt Hubert, his best game to date. 2.5 sacks, 5 tackles. That's the guy that we want to see when he was Big 12 first team. That's the guy we want to see right there. So, on other than a couple mishaps there, K-State defense really bought up this Oklahoma State defense. And this is the effort. Bought up this effort, this energy, up to Ames. Take it up there. Give your offense a chance to score some points.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game. And K-State, their best, in my opinion, their strength is their defensive line. I really do believe that is where it starts. And people are going to hate. I'm sorry. Here we go. They're going to hate it. I'm bringing the Chiefs in again. The Chiefs' strength is their defensive line, and it sets the tone for everything. And they've got a good secondary, but it's not the strength of their defense. But that defensive line really sets the tone for that entire defense. And because of the way that they play up front, it makes the players at the second level and the third level better. And I feel like K-State is the same type of deal. I feel like K-State has got a great defensive line that really sets the tone for this team. And you know, if they can stop the run, which I know they didn't if you look at it statistically, because Brown didn't have 110 yards and he did have a 50-yard run. But people that watch the game know that K-State stopped the run for a majority of that game. But if you can stop that run, you can make a team one-dimensional. And you can just kind of, you know, sit send those edge rushers, and then just kind of bend your ears back and go. It can be really difficult to stop, and it can make other players better. I think the K-State secondary's benefited. I think the K-State secondary, they've had a lot of guys that they've rotated in and out, and we're seeing them play. We're seeing them play great. You mentioned Keandre Thomas. He had a fantastic game with his six tackles, had a pass deflected in there, and it was really all over the field, it felt like, making plays. And, that was great to see. And obviously, the way that Echo Boydo's playing, you know, he continues to make plays whenever he's out there with tons of promise. And yeah, AJ Parker did have that bad missed tackle, but he still, having him back in the defense was very noticeable compared to West Virginia. So, you know, those guys are great, but I felt like it all really started, especially against Oklahoma State, with that defensive line. And you got to go back to Wyatt Huber. We've been sitting here all year saying, where is Wyatt Hubert? Is he going to show up? And we've seen him make a little flash here, make a little flash there. And I feel like the last couple weeks, you've kind of seen him revving up a little bit, beginning that Kansas game, and kind of going a little bit, even in that West Virginia game. So, but you're waiting for that breakout game from Wyatt Hubert, and he was just dominant. Oklahoma State could not stop him. I talked about the... in the K-State Oklahoma game, about how Oklahoma could not block Khalid Duke. And it became clear in the second half that they weren't going to block him. They just weren't going to block Khalid Duke in that game. That's what I felt with Wyatt Hubert in this game. I think it became apparent to me, it became apparent to me that they could not block Wyatt Hubert. And they weren't going to block Wyatt Hubert. He was going to do what he wanted, and that's what he did, getting 2.5 sacks, 3.5 tackle for loss, and then on the other side, you had Khalid Duke. He'd get two quarterback hurries, and, you know, then you had Bronson Massey. You know, he had a half a sack, you know, and he had a tackle for a loss and a QB hurry coming up the gut. And so, you know, K-State, I thought, did a really nice job at getting pressure on Spencer Sanders, making him uncomfortable, kind of neutralize the run game. And it kind of sets tone for the entire defense, and it really did. And, you know, Wyatt Hubert, I just can't get over that performance, Eddie. He played so good. He just played so good against Oklahoma State. Now, when you can get him playing like that, and I'm telling you what, him and Khalid Duke, those two, and that's just tough. You take him and you take those guys in case it has in the middle. That is a really, really, really good defensive line. And it's hard to find a defensive line that can match what K-State has there. And they played great. They played great against Oklahoma State. It was encouraging to see. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Eddie, this defense, they just crumbled the Oklahoma State offense. Oklahoma State did get going there in the third quarter when they had that win, but had the wind to their back. But man, for a majority of the game, they just felt like they couldn't do anything. Oklahoma, they got the ball, Eddie, with like a minute left, or maybe it was just a little under a minute, and they took a knee. They didn't even want to try to push the ball down the field against K-State with like a minute left on the clock. They didn't want to mess around with it. And they had a timeout. I'm pretty sure they had a timeout too. I mean, that's how good K-State. When you have Oklahoma State, Eddie, with like a minute left in the timeout saying, no, we don't even want to try to score, even though we're losing 13-0. We're just going to take a D and just get the hell out of here. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about what K-State was doing to that Oklahoma State offense. So, they were tremendous. It's a shame that performance ended up as not mattering, essentially. But they played tremendous. Tremendous. You cannot ask for anything more from that defense. And, I mean, yeah, a turnover would have been nice. I don't think they got a turnover.
No, they did not, no.
Yeah, they didn't get a turnover. So turnovers would obviously be nice. That would help with the offensive issues. But you just get nitpicky at that point if you're saying, well, you know, like some turnovers, because I mean they just balled out. They lined up and they just stopped them. I mean, that's just what happened. They lined up, they won battled the line of scrimmage. They won the battle at nearly every single position there. And they just flat out stopped them almost all game long.
Yeah, and when you that defensive line fits to the same thing. The defensive line set a tone for this ball game. Yeah, and you throw in Jalen Pickle, who we're starting to see play a little bit more. You obviously Duke in there, and Bronson Massey made another play. Drew Wiley, Hubert, Eli Huckins. This group right here really starting to cause some fits here in the Big 12 here as we three more games left. Obviously, Iowa State next for K-State in Ames, and this is it, at least for the Big 12 discussion. Like you already talked about earlier tonight, this is it. I mean, they lose this game. Yeah, you might as well put it in the book, put it in the bank, and not talk about it and just get better for next year. But
yeah, you're ready for the bowl game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it'll be huge. It'll be something to keep an eye on. Hopefully, we get the K-State defense what we saw last weekend play like this in Ames against a very good talented offense. We'll definitely continue that conversation next week there against Brock Purdy and, of course, the Iowa State Cyclones up there in Ames. That's obviously going to be a tough game, but yeah, you can't ask for a better performance than that against the number 14th ranked team in the country. Against that caliber offense there that they have, even though without no Tylan Wallace, with a less than 100% Chuba Hubbard, though, yeah, you can't ask for a better performance from those guys, and they certainly played well. And I want to, before we'll take a quick break, but before that, I want to get this in here, because this really stuck out to me. And I was listening to this on radio with Wyatt Thompson and Stan Weber. So I believe Justin Hughes made some type of... Circle this one, folks, K-State Nation. Circle this one if you not have already. So, you know Justin likes to talk a lot of trash from the field. So apparently, he made a proclamation. We'll just put it like this. That he said, specifically, in the press conference, and he told Wyatt this also, but he said, we will see them. We will see Oklahoma State again later on this year. I did not say this. Justin Hughes said it. Go back. He did say it. I didn't say it. Justin Hughes said it with confidence. I wish I had confidence like that. I don't know. But circle this one, folks. If K-State... Yeah, I think I'm right with you, Alex, on that. I think K-State's going to have to win out.
I mean, I want them to have more confidence than me. Want them to have the confidence that they'll be able to go out and do it. And, I mean, hell, if you're Justin Hughes, you're coming off that game, and I mean, your defense just balled out. I mean, you lost, so you're feeling like you can stop anybody.
That's what he said. Yeah, that's what he said.
Games, I will end up there.
Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, we can play with being locked in, being focused like that. I mean, you can play with any offense in the country, especially in the Big 12. Their next task there, Brock Purdy and Iowa State. I'm definitely going to be, we're all going to be tuning in for that game. Obviously, that's going to be Farmageddon. And obviously, Iowa State, I think the last time we were up there, we had a lead and blew it. So that was painful. Oh, I'm sorry to bring that up. I set myself up for that one, but that was just a heartbreaker there. But yeah, so you gotta play all four quarters. This team knows that. This team knows what they have to do. Justin Hughes, he's going up there with full confidence in this team. This defense can carry that momentum, and I think we're starting to see a trend. Last year with Scotty Hazleton, this defense continued to get better and better, and they slowed offenses down. I think we're starting to see the same thing under Joe Klingemann. This defense is starting to have a little swag to them, you know what I'm talking about. So they can carry that swag up there to Ames and play like that and turn Brock Purdy over. They're going to give K-State a chance to win this game. But I would like to save some of this Iowa State talk for next week. So, all right, we're going to step aside real quick here on the Purple Project Podcast. K-State loses by 2 to Oklahoma State, the 14th ranked team in the country last week, 20-18, Heartbreak City for K-State. and we're in the bye now and in the middle of preparing for Iowa State. On the other side of this break, got some volleyball news to share, and of course Bruce Weber and the Cats. Man, basketball is not too far. Stay tuned. Triple P will be back, folks.
You're listening to the newest podcast in Manhattan, Kansas. Purple Project Podcast will return after this.
And push it up!
Podcast here in Manhattan, Kansas. Eddie Greer the third here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden living out there in San Diego, California. Oklahoma State gives K-State another loss in conference play by 2 points. 2 points. 2018. Man, frustrating to say that at the very least. K-State dropping to 4-3. Overall, 4-2 in conference play, and yet we're still in the talk of trying to get the all into the Big 12 championship game. Well, the whole hope hinges next week when the boys take on Iowa State. A lot more to come next time on the podcast. Me and Alex will have more of that discussion next week. But first, though, I'll mention volleyball. Volleyball deserves a shutout. Of course, we want to talk about K-State athletics, right? So, K-State going into their final homestand of the year. And what a year it's been for K-State volleyball. Susie Fritz doing a fabulous job. This team and this ball club is very young this year. And obviously, last couple years, I mean, this team has had some individual good, very good players. I know in my time when I was there, and that was not too long ago, Caitlin Pelger was on the team. Very good, very talented. And they had a good, talented sophomore or freshman at the time named Katie Brand as well. So I do remember some of the volleyball players during my time at K-State. So, but they didn't have a good team. And this team apparently, very young, with some good athletes, led by Aaliyah Carter and Jalen Nebhard, who was named Big 12 Rookie of the Year this past week. And kudos to the volleyball team for sweeping Texas Tech on Saturday before the heartbreak loss against Oklahoma State, unfortunately, there. But K-State, folks, if you've not been paying attention, K-State Nation, 8-4. And this is all, this year they're playing all Big 12 opponents, no out-of-conference opponents. They're 8-4 this year, and they're third in their rank nationally. 10th nationally, only ranked behind, of course, Baylor and Texas. Yes, those two teams right there. So that's kudos to Susie Fritz, and this team is young. And obviously, we haven't talked about them enough, obviously, with football and basketball being the primary denominators here in Manhattan. But let's not forget about the success of volleyball this year, and they deserve high praise. They're going to look for the sweep on TCU tomorrow and Saturday at Bramlage Coliseum. Ooh, excuse me. So I wanted to put that in the notes there tonight. Okay, the volleyball team doing very well, and they could possibly in that 10-4, Alex. So I don't know if you have any more comments on the volleyball team, but this team has a good future if Susie Fritz continues to develop these young players.
They do. And I do have a thought. But quickly before I get into the thought, I just want to give you a fun nugget, which I don't even know why I'm telling you. I can just tell you this off the podcast, but I'm not. So you remember where I lived in Manhattan, my apartment, my junior and senior year. You came over a couple times, Eddie. In fact, you came over, I believe, for a Christmas party.
I do remember that.
My Christmas party one year there. My roommate and I. But Caitlin Pelger, she lived in my apartment before me. So if you want a fun fact, there it is. And yeah, so she lived in my apartment before me, and I learned that because her mail came to our mail, and I ended up reaching out to her and had to send her a mail. So yeah, she lived in my apartment prior to me. But getting to current volleyball players, and not former volleyball players from when we were in college, and his team they've been great this year. You know, 8-4 record. You mentioned it, 10-4 is really, it's realistic that they could get double digit wins, because they started off, you know, with their split against Iowa State, and we touched on that that they looked good there, and I think we might have actually touched on it after they swept West Virginia and started 4-1. But they've been really dominant throughout the year, and I mean, you know, two of their four losses are to Texas. I don't think there's any shame in that. Texas has got a they've typically had a good team. They're ranked number one in the country, I believe if I recall correctly. I think they're ranked number one in the country. So there's really no shame in losing to Texas.
No, they played a hell of a game.
Yeah. So you take those two away against Texas, who's number one in the country. I mean, you're sitting at 10-2, and they're winning nearly not weekend in, weekend out, because they're doing this little two game series essentially. I guess you'd call it, yeah, these two game series. But weekend in, weekend out. I mean, they're winning. They dropped one to Kansas. It was a little disappointing, but I mean, they bounced back and then they won their next one the next night. And so they're playing really good. I think you hit it right in the head. They got a lot of young players that really have them set up to be really a force to be reckoned with in the future. I don't think that's a surprise. We know Susie Friss. We know her well. We know that she's a very good volleyball coach. She does a really good job of developing players. But, it almost feels like she's taking it to another level right now with what she's doing with some of these younger players and this team. And, I'm really excited to see if that's something that they can keep going. And, they're on a three-game winning streak right now. They're 5-1 on the road. That's might be the craziest stat of all, is that they've been so dominant on the road. But they're on a three-game winning streak. You know, they've got a couple coming up with TCU and then Baylor after that. And I'm eager to see how they finish this season out and how long they can stretch that winning streak.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth there. Yeah, TCU coming up tomorrow at Bramus Coliseum. This is their last games at home. Gets two against TCU, and then like you just mentioned, Alex, two next weekend against the Baylor Bears, and quite frankly, no, never mind. So Baylor next week to wrap it up. Yeah, that's a crazy stat there. 5-1 on the road. That's getting it done right there. Especially we have to go on the road in tough environments. I mean, less than the pandemic, whatnot, but still though, 5-1, very impressive, and I'm anxious to see it. Yeah, so if you guys are interested in listening to the game, obviously, or watching the game, K-Man will have it this weekend, and ESPN Plus, the Big 12 now on ESPN Plus will have these games, 6:30, both games, 6:30 start on ESPN Plus. K-Man with Rob Boker on the call for these games. So yeah, definitely we'll see if K-State can close it out for sure, and we'll definitely keep our eyes on this for sure. We'll give our recaps, of course, with football on a bye week here for Chris Kleiman's team. So wanted to give an update there on that. So very, very impressive. And yeah, splitting KU and then sweeping Tech last week. So K-State projecting in the right direction. So, speaking of direction, what direction will the basketball team, the men's basketball team, will go to in this unknown 2020-21 season here? As we're going to talk a little bit about men's basketball to end this podcast tonight on the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Zane for y'all here on the podcast. And Bruce Weber spoke on the Zoom conference earlier today. I had a chance to watch it, actually, before getting everything ready to go for this podcast. And obviously, I had it here for a second. There we go. And take a while, and I don't know if you watched the press conference or not, but take a wild guess to see who's been the most improved player. He mentioned his name. I'm going to let you take a guess at it first because I know who it is. But Alex, take a wild guess. Who's the most improved player so far in the offseason for this men's basketball team?
Oh, man, I read quotes from, I didn't see it because I wasn't able to catch it. I'm able to catch those sometimes when I'm working. Wasn't able to catch it today. I did read the quotes from Kellis and John about the press conference. I'm going to say, I didn't see one about most improved, though. I know he raved about, was it Celton Miguel who he raved about? I think it might have been Celton Miguel who he kept raving about. No, it was Nigel Pack. It was Nigel Pack he kept raving about. But but that couldn't be most improved because he's new. So I'm going to say, he said Mike McGurl is a safe. He said Mike McGurl's a leader to lead the team in points this year. So I'm going to go Mike McGurl.
Yep, that's right on the money, yep. And also, he did mention Celton Miguel and Nigel Pack also in that same sentence also.
He compared Nigel Pack to Cam Stokes. I'm pretty sure he compared Nigel Pack to Cam Stokes, unless I'm mixing that up with Celton Miguel. But I think it was Nigel Pack he compared him to Cam Stokes.
Yeah, so that's interesting coming out of that conference also. But yeah, I mean, the lone senior, obviously, Mike McGurl, showing some early flashes early in fall workouts, I'm going to put it like that. So basketball, not too far-fetched now with the tournament coming up, the Little Apple tournament that I talked about that we kind of discussed also in this podcast a few episodes ago. November 25th, Drake, first basketball game here at Bramish College. Yeah, Bramish Coliseum for the men's basketball team, Bruce Weber. And he mentioned also in there about, again, have to bring this dreaded word in the conversation, but again, the pandemic having some effect on one player. Siri Lewis had to miss a few practices because of it. So that's one of your big men coming in there, backing up. Montavious Irving and Antonio Gordon. So I had to draw a blank there for a second, but yeah, but I've been too focused on football. So definitely trying to get back, trying to keep my eyes on basketball here, trying to get myself up to date and about the information and stuff like that. So it's nice to hear from Bruce Weber earlier this evening before getting everything ready to go. But yeah, this schedule here that we're going to talk about just for a little bit. and you add Butler to the mix here on December 11th, obviously. Colorado, a part of that whole preseason tournament, 27th of November. And then the Purple's at home. So you got Kansas City coming here to Bramlage. UNLV, Milwaukee, just to run it down here. You go on the road. The Big East, Big 12, you got Butler. That is going to be, we know how good Butler is at basketball.
Yeah.
Iowa State on the road. Woo! And then you get obviously Baylor. So you have two conference games in there sandwiched in.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me.
I'm looking at this for the first, well, really for the third time, but.
I couldn't figure that out.
What are we doing?
I know. I looked at it and I was like, wait. My first reaction was, wait, why are they playing Baylor on December 19th? Wait, why are they playing Iowa State on December 15th? That doesn't make sense. And then I was like, okay. So I see they're playing Jacksonville, South Dakota, and that's normal. You'd play them around the 21st, the 29th. But I'm like, why are they playing two Big 12 teams in mid-December? I couldn't figure that out unless they're just trying to
get it in or something.
Yeah, because it's a shorter schedule. With some games canceled, they just decided to move it around and shorten it. Because they have the season ending February 27th, and usually it goes a week or two into March.
Yeah.
So they might just be doing that to help kind of shorten that season a little bit. But it's funky. That's a little weird.
Yeah, and I have not looked at, I'll be honest, I have not looked at the rosters for the rest of the Big 12 teams yet. So I'll get on that here in the next few days for sure. But you mentioned it on the last episode of the Purple Project that K-State coming here, preseason ranked 10th, obviously. Yeah, this is if you're expecting NCAA tournament, you can forget about that. Not even an NIT. You can throw that in the garbage as well. So, yeah, two Big 12 teams in there. Baylor at home on the 19th of December. And like you mentioned, Jacksonville, South Dakota, Alex, come in around Christmas time. And then it really ramps up with Big 12 play with TCU after New Year's there at home. And then, I mean, again, I have not looked at all the rosters yet. So then, of course, we talked about A&M again, the SEC Big 12 tournament or challenge or whatever you want to call it. Texas A&M again, but this time you get them at Bramlage. So hopefully, I mean, we'll see what the team is like around that time. I don't know. And you obviously have KU and Lawrence. Oh, boy. On February 2nd, and then you get them back again on the 16th later that month, and then of course your last couple games before the Big 12 tournament is Oklahoma, February 23rd at home. That's your last home game there, and then you got to go all the way to Morgantown to face Huggy and the Mountaineers, February 27th to cap off the Big 12 schedule. So, man, Alex, there's a lot to kind of fit there within a short season, and then you got to throw in the corona in there also, see how teams are dealing with it. It's going to be interesting, man. I mean, interesting schedule, and you got some tough opponents in this non-con, Butler, A&M, Colorado, some of these teams in here. So, all in all, it's just a mixed bag, Alex, when you look at the schedule.
It really is, and the funny thing, you said Lawrence, you're like, oh boy, don't know what'll happen there. Let's just say we don't fight them this time. You know?
Yeah, let's just not fight them this time.
Yeah, let's just keep the fist down and
let's just not do anything stupid and just come out of there. Yeah.
As much joy as it could be to see KU get their butt kicked. No, that's not a good thing. I do want to give you a quote from Montavious Murphy, though, because he gave his thoughts on being picked last in the preseason Big 12 poll today. He said, we all see it. It's nothing that's going to phase us. They can pick whatever. We're going to come in and compete every day. We feel like we're the best team. So, okay. I once again appreciate the confidence that he is exuding. I don't believe they are the best team. I am glad that he thinks that. I'm not gonna. You know, the thing is, I'll never. You know, the reality of it is, I'll laugh at things athletes say, but that is what I want the players on my team to think. I want them to think they're the best. I want them to think that they're gonna make the Big 12 championship. I want them to think that we are the best team in the conference. I mean, you know, obviously they're not. But you know, for me, it was actually kind of encouraging to hear that. It was like, okay, this team, I mean, they do feel a chip on their shoulder, feel like they have something to prove, and I think that could possibly work to their advantage. And one other nugget quickly before I get into the schedule, I did look, and it was Nigel Pack that Bruce Weber compared to Cam Stokes. There we go. I'm blank on Cam Stokes' name. And he was asked. He said, who do you think is going to lead the team in scoring? And he said Mike McGurl and Nigel Pack are his top candidates, with Deshaun Gordon not far behind. So, you know, that was interesting to hear. And it sounds like a starting lineup could include in its some sort of combination of, I lost it. I saw it though. I saw it and I lost it now. But it, anyway, it had. It was. There were really no big surprises in it. It was. It was.
It was Nigel Pack, Mike McGurl, Dave Juan, Montavis Murphy would be in the mix. And then I'm blanking on the other, but it was KOC.
Izagu. Izagu.
Izagu. Okay. But however it's said, you know, there's so many bad names. It just butchers so many of them. But, you know, I think it's an interesting. It's an interesting starting lineup. And, you know, a lot of young guys are going to get thrown in there early. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. I'm really encouraged. But getting into the schedule, I was thinking earlier this week, I was like, you know, it's K-State. They might have a game on Friday. Because I was thinking, I was like, okay, I mean, we're in mid-November, and K-State's playing by mid-November, so, man, let me check, because it feels like they usually begin their season on a Friday. And I was like, let me check and make sure they don't play on Friday. And I looked, and I saw, yeah, it was Wednesday the 25th, that game against Drake, and I was like, wow, is it really that far back? And then I thought, well, you know, it is the coronavirus here, so, you know, it probably is starting a week and a half later. That's probably about right, and so... You know, that's when they kick off. But the Little Apple Classic, you know, you're going to get it going there. I think that Drake's going to be a good, good opening. Bruce Weber said it straight off the, really right off the bat today. Was asked, what do you expect for your team? And he said, I have no idea.
Exactly.
I appreciate his honesty there. He said, I have no idea. He said, we've had no scrimmages. We've had no exhibitions. We haven't had any of it. So I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I have no clue. So Bruce will be learning with us when K-State goes out and plays Drake and see what they do. But, you know, they're going to get tested early because they got Colorado right after that. And, that's not an easy task. And hey, K-State wanted a difficult schedule, and you know they got some teams in here. You know they got some teams in here. You know, got Colorado coming to Bramlage. You know they got where was Texas A&M coming to Bramlage. So they got some teams coming in. You're going on the road to Butler, as we mentioned, and so you know, look, they're going to be tested. They're going to be tested early, and I think that. It's going to, and obviously UNLV coming in, that's not going to be a cakewalk game either. I mean, hell, Milwaukee's not a cakewalk. A lot of games in here are not cakewalks, Eddie. And you have a team that is new and young, and it's going to be really interesting to see what they do on this beginning half of the schedule, because I think that we expect that they're going to have a losing Big 12 record. And opening up with Iowa State and Baylor is not necessarily the most encouraging thing in the world because those are two pretty good teams. Baylor was preseason ranked
number 2.
So that's not going to be easy, to say the least. And going on the road,
that's interesting. That's interesting. I'm going to jump in here real quick. I'm just kind of scrolling here. I know I'm going to do a deeper dive on it here. As I get closer, but yeah, that's interesting that you say that because Baylor, on this side that I'm looking at, it's I'll just give it to you anyway. BustinBrackets.com. Baylor's ranked number 1 in the conference.
Yeah.
KU's number 2. Red Raiders 3, and Texas, who has most players coming back, is 4. Texas underrated, but Texas is at number 4. So that's just the 4 teams right there. For you, so.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, I think that K-State, I think that they're going to start 0-2 in Big 12 play. I think that that's, I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer, but I think that's a relatively safe bet. Hard to see them going to Iowa State to get a win. Obviously, hard to see them beating Baylor at home. But they have an opportunity. They have an opportunity against TCU coming home. I think TCU is picked to finish 9th. In the Big 12, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, you got a chance there to get a Big 12 win that first Saturday in January. And you do go to Texas Tech, but then you come home against Oklahoma State, and then you got a game against Iowa State that, I think that they have an opportunity to get Iowa State there because Iowa State's good. But, I mean, I don't think that they were great last year. I think that that's
good. I don't think they're good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a game that you can, it's always hard when it aims, but I mean, I think that's a game that they could possibly get there at home against Iowa State. So, you know, as, well, you're sitting there thinking, oh man, they could start 0-2. You know, I mean, realistically, you could, though, get to 3-3 in Big 12 play if, you know, if you've got things going by the time you come to that TCU game. It's obviously going to get harder when you have to go to Texas, to Oklahoma, then West Virginia and Baylor. That's going to be a tough four-game stretch, but, you know, you have that opportunity against Texas A&M that we talked about, and then you're going to have another really difficult stretch post the Texas A&M game where you got KU, Tech, Texas, and KU. That's not good. You might not want to turn your TV on the first half of the month of February, but once you get through that, and you got TCU on the road, Oklahoma at home, and you end it to West Virginia, I think K-State could make some games up there. So, you know, Eddie, I think that there's some stretches here for them. I was also thinking earlier in the week that, it was actually today, I saw the Ivy League canceled all their winter sports. And it made me think, I don't think we're going to have a lot of these smaller conferences playing basketball this year. And it makes me wonder what that's going to mean for the NCAA tournament.
And
because you're going to lose a lot of those teams that would be your 16 seeds, your 15 seeds, your 14 seeds, your 13 seeds. And then you're going to lose some of those bubble teams. You're going to lose maybe a St. Mary's. I'm not saying St. Mary's isn't playing basketball. They may, but I'm just using that as an example. You know, maybe you would lose your St. Mary's. You lose your mid-major that typically comes out. But the biggest thing is I think you could lose those 12 to 16 seats because a lot of those conferences, I think, may not end up playing basketball. Who knows how many will follow the Ivy League, but I would assume that there will be a handful of small conferences that won't play. And it just makes me wonder what that's going to mean for the NCAA tournament. And if that's going to mean that the bubble is just a lot softer. And not saying that means K-State's going to make the NCAA tournament. But if things break right for K-State and they have a year where they go, hypothetically, what if they go 7-11? I think they play 18 games in Big 12 play this year. Say they go 7-11. And they finished the season with 15 wins, or 13 to 15 wins. 13, 15 wins, 7-11 in Big 12 play. Can that make you the NCAA tournament? Or will that be able to make you the NCAA tournament as a 13 seed or a 14 seed, where most years it wouldn't? That's what I'm curious about. And more than anything, I think that knowing that this bubble could be softer than years past, K-State just needs to keep their heads down. They just need to keep growing every day and keep playing. Because if they do and things break their way, they might be able to find themselves playing some meaningful basketball down the stretch that they weren't anticipating if there wasn't a COVID year.
Yeah. So we'll just have to see. I mean, you brought up an interesting point. I'm sure we'll talk about it more as basketball season gets closer and closer as... Yeah, so that's interesting that you bring that up. So,
I don't think it's going to happen. I will say that off the get. Everyone's going to say, Al says K-State's going to make the NCAA tournament. No.
They're not.
K-State's going to make the NCAA tournament. I don't think they're going to make the NCAA tournament. I don't think they're going to make the NIT. I don't think they'll make any sort of postseason comp tournament. My point simply being, it's an interesting nugget that could be worth watching if we see K-State performing a little better than we initially expected.
Yeah, and also these young guys that we talked about on the Purple Project, and the Sutton McGill's, the Nigel Pax, everyone is waiting to see what he does. The Luke Kasupkis, Bradford, the couple, and let's not forget these transfers also. The Carlton Lingard, Rudy Williams, these guys need time to mesh on the basketball court. That's the other thing I'm going to be paying attention to. I'm sure we'll talk about this even more going forward. These young guys, they need time on the basketball court to gel. They didn't have that time early on in camp, and now you spent that time on Zoom with Zoom meetings. Now you're actually getting together working out, and you need that team camaraderie. So that's what I'm going to be paying attention to, is how this team's going to gel. Obviously, the one lone senior, we know who that guy is, obviously. You have no Xavier Sneed. You have no McCall Maywin, who was very, very not very good last year. Okay. And you have Cardi Jada, who was a drama queen last year, who's moved on to Virginia Tech. So you don't have him screwing up the locker room. So yeah, you have new talent, and you still have the holdovers, the freshman holdovers from last year, and Dejuan Gordon, Antonio Gordon, Montavious Murphy, who had their share of good times, but also had their share of lowlights, including the fight that we're not going to talk about much anymore. But yeah, I mean, that's what you're going to get. So, and we talked about the Dejuan Gordon. Can he take that next step that everyone's expecting to? So that's before he flamed out last year there. So they hit the freshman wall. That's pretty
exactly. Yep.
So I mean, that's what I'm going to be paying attention to. Is, I mean, you have a mix of young guys and you have transfers who play basketball, who bring that experience to this young core of guys from K-State. This recruiting class was up in the top 50 this upcoming year. So, man, this is just unknown questions that, yeah, I'm with Bruce. I just don't know what we're going to get from this entire team this year. It's going to be for what it's worth, Alex, it's going to be must-see TV to see what this K-State basketball team does.
It'll be must-see TV, and I will be watching it. I will be watching it to see what happens, because I'm very curious. I'm very curious to see what they do. And if we've learned anything, Eddie, about this season is, this sports season really is unpredictable. It's really, you can't predict what's going to happen. Who predicted the Miami Marlins making the playoffs this year? I mean, who predicted that? No one predicted that they were going to make the playoffs in baseball. No one. Who predicted that the Miami Dolphins, wow, a lot of Miami now that I'm realizing this, who realized the Miami Dolphins would be 5-3 right now? No one guessed the Miami Dolphins would be 5-0 right now, but there they are. You know, the playoffs began today. They'd be there. So I don't know if it's COVID or if it's we need to go to Miami. But one of the two, something. I'm going to go with it's probably COVID. So, you know, there's just some things that are a little unpredictable with this season. I think it's even more interesting with this K-State basketball team because they have so many new guys. And they are so young, probably the youngest team in the Big 12. And so you would assume in your mind, well, that's probably going to hurt them because they won't have the experience. They won't be able to kind of lead them through and guide them through these times. And that would be the way that I would lean. But then there's part of you that thinks, maybe these guys are just like, screw it, you know? You know, we're just going to go out and play. No pressure. Let's just see what happens. And, you know, maybe it works. Maybe it gels. And I would assume there will be continuity issues, though, early on. When you've got new guys, young guys, you're trying to find your leaders. You know, you don't have Xavier Sneed there to really help lead the team. And so who's going to step up and be that leader and kind of help them through this walking time? I would be willing to bet you almost anything, Eddie, that the schedule we just read off is not going to be the schedule ultimately, because I am sure that there will be games that are canceled. I wouldn't be surprised if a game was replaced with another.
Right.
You know, for COVID reasons. And so we just don't know. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with this team, but it's going to be interesting to see how last year's freshmen, this year's sophomores progress. I think that's what I'm more interested in anything, Eddie, is to see. We talked about Dejuan Gordon. Can he take the next step? I am optimistic that he can, but I'm curious. Montavious Murphy, he looked good when he was in there. He was healthy, but he was injured for majority of the year. You know, can he come out and have a healthy year and make an impact? And, you know, how are these new young guards going to play? You know, how is Selton Miguel and Nigel Pack going to do?
You know, I know that Luke, and I'm not even going to say his last name because I butcher it every time,
I know he's got an injury right now, and he's out till December, but can he help K-State offensively? You know, having somebody who can hit shots. So, there are definitely some things to watch out for. Record-wise, it may not be the prettiest season, but I definitely think that there's not a lack of storylines. And you know what? I appreciate Bruce's honesty. One thing about Bruce is we can poke fun at Bruce and, Bruce this, Bruce that. But Bruce is always pretty honest, Eddie. He's always pretty honest with the media. And he's usually not trying to cover things up. And this is just another example of it. He's saying, look, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I have no idea. We'll find out together. So, you know, we'll find out.
Yep, that's for sure. Time is up on the Purple Project Podcast. Real quick here, yeah, there are back to the Big 12 here real quick. There's only two games on the schedule here to kind of wrap things up here. From Manhattan, Kansas, and I'm on the Purple Project Podcast, Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden, TCU going to West Virginia. The game's all going to be on Fox. TCU 3-3, West Virginia off the heartbreak of Texas, 4-3 for West Virginia, so that'll be interesting there. And in the afternoon game, Baylor 1-4 taking on Texas Tech on FS1 at 3. 2-5 Tech team there. So that's the only games going on there. And K-State, Iowa State, time a game next Saturday at 3 p.m. on Fox. Big game for K-State. We will break that all down in the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Alex, any final words? For basically, we're closing out now, but any final words before we put in the closing music?
No, man, I think we touched on it all. A lot going on in K-State athletics right now. Although this weekend might be a little bit of a slow sports weekend for you and I, there is a lot going on in the sports world right now. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I do want to congratulate you as an Atlanta fan on Freddie Freeman winning the he won the NL MVP.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But it won. Yeah, so congratulations to you. That is a Braves fan. That is obviously, I know very well that when one of your players wins an MVP award, that is an MVP award for the team as well, typically.
Yep.
that's good. Good for Freddie. Good for the Braves. He's well deserving of that too. This year with the way that he played And you know what? Despite there not being a lot of sports, yeah, this weekend there's a lot going on right now and plenty to talk about, and we will definitely have an action-packed weekend. It all makes up for me next week, Eddie, because I don't have anything this weekend, but next weekend I've got K-State and Iowa State on Saturday, and then the Chiefs are going to Vegas to play the Raiders, who are their one loss on Sunday Night Football. And then K-State basketball kicks it off on the next Wednesday.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
For what? It's going. Sports is going.
Sports is going. That is for sure. A lot going on as the holidays are around the corner here in Manhattan, Kansas, or wherever you live at K-State Nation. All right, folks, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap things up for another episode of Triple P tonight. And, of course, this episode will be up at some point tomorrow, probably more likely tomorrow evening as well, heading into the slow sports weekend. So you're looking for any content, tell your friends, tell your K-State friends about the Purple Project Podcast. For Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer III, thank you for listening to this podcast episode of the Purple Project Podcast evening. Go Cats. Alex, go Cats. We will do it again next week. Yeah.
listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.